talk to me a bit about, you know, how this whole production came together. I mean, 19 years ago now, I guess. I mean, you know, what made you want to get involved?
Well, you know, I just kind of felt something that I used to do when I had hit records and I was traveling, and I would go to hospitals and orphanages and take my guitar on a day off, or if I had time, I would go in the morning and do a show at night, and it's kind of what we did in the neighborhood that I grew up in. It was the tenements of Montreal, but it was a neighborhood that cared about other people. And so 19 years ago, I thought, you know what? Maybe I'll call some musicians that I just met and see if, you know, we could do a Christmas show. And so we needed the title. So at the beginning, it became, you know, the Andy Kim Christmas. And an artist showed up, and my tickets were $25 because I didn't want anyone to scalp them. I wanted the people that took the subway, that took the bus, that took the streetcars to come to a show and see people like the Bare Naked Ladies and Serena Ryder and just a lot of people that I met along the way, you know. And so that's how it started. And Todd, I thought it was a one-off. I was going to do it for 1 year.
And yeah, I bet.
And now it's 19.
Well, and I mean, looking back, and I know this is putting you on the spot a little bit over those 19 years, but I mean, overall, what's the experience been like for you as a performer getting up there?
Well, I'm so gracious to understand the fact that I pay nobody. I don't pay anybody. You're coming to donate your time for the purpose of helping those in need. And so it's always a blessing to know that you're doing it for the right cause. You're not doing it to make a few thousand bucks. You're not doing it to make anything. You're donating your time. And I think that it's been an incredible music community that we have in Canada that allows us to kind of do this. And so for me, you know, I get a chance to sing a couple of songs, but there are at least 10 other artists or 8 other artists and sometimes 15 artists that show up and they donate their time. And so it's really, really, for me, it's pretty exciting to know that that exists.
One of the write-ups for the Christmas show that I read over, it kind of touches on how I think you've raised close to $3 million for various causes throughout these Canadian shows. And it also kind of touches on your compassion, generosity, and commitment to charitable causes that makes your legacy so enduring. How does that make you feel when you hear comments like that?
I'm a little uncomfortable. I don't do it for the publicity. I do it for, as I said, you know, my ticket started off at 25, and now I do Massey Hall for $35 and $85. And so I don't think of a benevolent moment needs a bow.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Well, I mean, and you're fairly humble about that too, but I think that what you've done here, and as you said that, you know, you do all this for free and the tickets, you know, are not, it's not a revenue generating thing. It's just sort of, and it's amazing all these artists that not only yourself, but all these other artists are so willing to give their time.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, our ticket sales have been incredible, but what really happens along the way is that corporations come and donate to the charity. And so if someone gives a charity like, you know, $10,000, $15,000, and they get tickets, they get, you know, 5 tickets or 6 tickets to come to the show. But it's a total community moment. And for the most part, I don't know how it all turns out as far as the ability to kind of dissect what it's about. I just think that just from a musician point of view, we're lucky to do what we do. Not everybody makes a lot of money from playing music, but we celebrate it and we make people feel better. So music is basically medicine. And to me, I've always felt that.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Now, if you can, maybe tee us up a little bit for the Calgary shows. You've got yourself, Ron Sexsmith, Maestro Fresh West, Beverly Mahood. I mean, what can people expect on those two glorious nights?
They can expect Calgary-born and raised talent. They can expect Canadian talent that maybe wasn't born in Calgary. But, you know, I don't know how to answer that question. It's just musicians getting together. There's no bonfire.
Right.
There's no fireworks. People come to donate their time because they understand that there's a need out there. There's a need out there for understanding, and there's a bigger need for forgiveness. And so if you can find a way to steal a few moments from whatever your life is going through and come and hear music that is really born and raised in this country, I think it speaks a lot to why I do it. And it speaks a lot to all those that join me.
Well, and I think that the last few years has really shown that, you know, when the going gets tough, people will, you know, certainly step up and represent. And I think that you've seen that throughout the 19 years that you've been doing this, and between artists and just the people that show up in the audience, it's been, I'm guessing, pretty overwhelming. Now, I'm gonna shift gears on you here a little bit, okay? I'm going to take you a little bit back a few years. Are you okay with that?
Well, I got a lot of years back, so yeah.
Now, I have to ask you, since I have Andy Kim one-on-one here, I've got to ask you about those, you know, late 60s, early 70s hits, Sugar Sugar, Rock Me Gently. I mean, those songs, when I was a kid in the 70s, I'm not going to date myself here, but, you know, I have memories of my mom on weekends. You'd have that old AM radio on in the house all day long. And, you know, not that you wanted to, but you couldn't get away from those songs. I mean, they were staples. So I guess my question is, what was that time like for you to see your songs reach such heights and gain you so much exposure?
First of all, it was a miracle. You know, I grew up, as I said, in the tenements of Montreal. A transistor radio changed my life. It, you know, I guess I can say where I grew up, my destiny was already predicted. But listening to WABC in New York City and WKBW in Buffalo late at night under the covers, I started to dream. I don't come from a musical family. I mean, we're just ordinary folks. But there was something inside of me that happened and allowed me to believe that I could go to New York City and I could meet the people that wrote the songs and produced the songs. I've always believed that, you know, I believed so much in a dream that God sent me a special angel to take care of me and make sure that I was safe. And kind of running away from home and being part of a bigger picture. So I get emotional when I think about it, because I just think that it's been one hell of a ride. I have had the best life, and those songs were kind of miracles. You never know. I was told by the wonderful Lieber and Stoller. Are you familiar with them?
I am, yes, yes.
They wrote Hound Dog for Elvis,
yep,
and
yep,
Jailhouse
gotcha.
Rock and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was lucky enough to be with Jeff Barry, Ellie Greenwich, and Phil Spector in that environment. And I was told early on that you're only as good as your last 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And so for me to have How Do We Ever Get This Way hit the charts and give some kind of promise gave my producer and the record company the hope that I could make hit records, you know, and I ended up making those hit records. And Sugar Sugar, I'll give you an interesting example if you have a moment.
Yes, please.
May 24th, 1969, Baby, I Love You. It's the American charts for the first time. May 24th, 1969, same day. Sugar Sugar was released, but nobody wanted to play it till July, the middle of July. And it eventually became number one and stayed number one, I think, for four consecutive weeks. And then Wilson Pickett records it, and it becomes a million seller for him, and went to number four in the R&B charts. And then Tina Turner, Ike and Tina did it, and Bob Marley. And then all of a sudden, I went from just kind of being another writer or a lucky guy to being looked at as a songwriter. And I don't know how these songs come to you. They just happen. And then you're lucky enough if you can finish it. And then you make a record.
Just like that, hey?
It's all ephemeral, to be honest with you, because there is no time to examine stuff. You know, we all are given the opportunity to do something. And when it's successful, I think there's a lot of hard work and success, and sometimes you're just plain lucky. And I think songs come out every day. In my day, 400 records came out every week.
Right.
How do you swim through that and get to, you know, get on the charts? And so something's going on within your spirit that people listen to and connect with. And I look at my life today, and I'm as busy as I was then, and I feel very blessed.
Well, now that kind of leads to my final question here. I mean, you have had a very long and distinguished career, two number one Billboard hits. I think it was over 30 million albums sold, multiple Hall of Fame inductions, appointment to the Order of Canada, star on Canada's Walk of Fame, and more. What's going on and what's left for Andy Kim to accomplish?
Well, you know what? Here's what everyone should know. Everyone should look in the mirror and ask themselves, what am I doing with my one and only life? What am I doing with my one and only life? Am I hiding? Am I blaming someone? Am I doing the best I can and I can't move forward? It's all about the battle of what you wish for and what you'd like to have happen. And to understand that sometimes luck plays a big part of your life. I don't know how you were as a kid. Did you ever want to be in radio? Did you just want to be a movie star? Did you want to
hockey? Yeah, everybody kind of has those dreams, that sort of thing. But you're right. I mean, you have to make every moment count, don't you?
And you have to believe. You have to have this steel to believe.
Right.
STEEL.
Nice, nice. Yeah.
You have to have that. So, in other words, the power of success is an undiagnosed belief in what you're doing. And it's got to be with love. It's got to be with understanding that if you get blessed with a hit record, or you get blessed for even trying to find a hit record, that's a gift.
Absolutely.
And if you devote yourself to that gift, you'll be happy because it's you. This is not about living someone else's life. This is not about looking to see, oh, well, this guy's doing this and this band is doing this and this band is doing that. No. It's about you. What are you doing with your one and only life? And I think it's a stark reality to someone, and maybe a younger generation maybe doesn't see it that way. Hey, man, I've just been blessed.
Yeah, for sure.
And what do you do with it when you're blessed? You spread it around. You make it work for other people. I mean, I'm doing a Christmas show in Montreal. It's my 10th anniversary in Montreal, the city of my birth, and I heard this young 20-year-old band. They're just young guys, and I love their music. So I'm putting them on the show in hopes that they can start a fan base. They can get a profile. It's what I've always done on all the ones for the 19 years. Why do I do that? Because of where I came from.
Yeah.
And, you know.
You got a lot of prophetic wisdom, don't you?
Oh, I don't know.
As you get older.
I haven't figured it out. All I know is that you're kind enough to ask me a question, and I'll answer it the best I can. And
I think you're amazing. I've been a fan, like I said, for a very long time. I'm not gonna date myself on my age, but it's been a while. Yeah, back in the '70s when I was a kid, it was, yeah, you were a bit of an icon. So
well, thank you.